What's going on, FA Nation? Welcome, welcome. Apologies for not making it last week for Talladega, but it's Talladega. For cash games, you stack the back. For GPPs, you mix it up. You throw some darts. I made one lineup. It was looking actually pretty good through the first two and a half stages. Finished just outside the money, unfortunately, with some late race shuffling. Overall, the playoff field or the playoff schedule continues. This week we have the Roval. Matt, how's it going? I haven't been able to catch much cup racing the last couple of weeks just because one, I was on vacation. Another day I was working, and just NFL just seems to dominate every TV at the bar. But I am mostly excited for the Roval. I do love getting a lot of DFS exposure during road courses. Would you agree?
Yeah, I really like this track. I'm glad that it has worked out. I remember when everybody was like questioning why Charlotte would do this to its track, and then it worked phenomenally the first year, and then the second year. Was it the second year we got the famous Chase burnout?
I believe so. 2019.
Ran into the wall at the start of stage three, and then came back and won it, and then did the gladiator burnout that I like to call it. I really enjoy this race. It's actually on NBC this week, so don't have to go streaming it on USA or, you know, go find it on an app somewhere. It's actually on basic cable this week, so that's a bonus. I'm with you on Talladega. I mean, obviously, did the solo pod last week due to scheduling stuff. And then it was basically, you know, dart throws because it's Talladega this weekend. I don't know. Do you think it's going to be another dart throw weekend given what we've seen on the Roval style tracks this year?
I don't know. Like, just the nature of Talladega, Daytona, and now Atlanta, it's just I go into those races like every week. Not so much really caring about where drivers start. I mean, if that does play an influence when I start, but like lineup construction. But honestly, like, I do want like leverage plays. I love playing Landon Castle at Super Speedways when he's in the Cup Series. He's always under like 10% owned. I always feel like he pays off in some form or fashion. Like, he's always starting outside the top 30. He's got top 20 upside, you know, like, it, and no one ever plays him just because, you know, like, they don't really just understand like what happens at Talladega, and he'll ride around the back most of the time, and just move up just by avoiding the wreck. But again, you know, I haven't seen as many Roval races as probably you have. Granted, there's only been like a handful, but I didn't really get into like the DFS aspect of NASCAR until a few years ago. So I don't really think that there's as much variance. Obviously, with a road course like Indy, as we've seen the last 2 years, there's a ton of variance. So
that's kind of what I was thinking is, like, if you look back at like the actual road races this year, right? There hasn't been that much chaos at the actual road races.
Yeah.
But if you look at the Roval style road races.
Oh, okay, so and Indy kind of plays into that.
Right, because even though it's not like super high banked, it's still a road course built off of an oval, right? Whereas like Sonoma was pretty standard, Coda was pretty standard.
Road America was a snooze fest.
Yes. Watkins Glen to a degree was fairly standard. So I don't know. You know, we do see, I will say that if there is weather in the forecast, which I haven't double checked for Charlotte yet, we will see rain tires on these cars.
Whoop-dee-doo.
And last year, it was nuts with the rain tires on these cars. A year or two ago, it was chaos. So I think I'm going to build one for a standard road race. And then, you know, I'm going to build some lineups for a standard road race and then some for in case chaos kind of happens and there's a lot of shuffling that can happen. But, speaking of that, are you changing your strategy with Chase this week? Because he's so good on road courses. And he's won here twice. But he's
on a road course this year?
No. I don't think so. Did he win Watkins Glen?
Oh my god, that wasn't even that long ago.
Yeah, I can't. I'm spacing now, but I.
Did Tyler Reddick win Watkins Glen? Radio.
What was
it? I know Reddick won two road courses. I know one of them was Road America.
Right.
Chase finished fourth at Watkins Glen. Kyle Larson won Watkins Glen.
There you go. So Chase has not won a road course this year. Because you've had Reddick win two. Chastain has won one, right?
Suarez
has won one. So, I don't know, but I was just saying, like, he got the win at Talladega last weekend. So now he's locked into the round of eight. Do we think that he's trying to make everybody else point in and increase his points lead? Or is he just starting to prep for what should be a fairly basic round in the round of eight?
I still think that there's some weight equity with him. I mean, last I checked on DraftKings Sportsbook, he was, I think, a 5-1 favorite to win, and Reddick, I think, was right behind him at 7 or 6-1. I mean, you bring up a really good point. I don't like operating under the mindset that, you know, these guys go into cruise control when they lock in their spot in the next round, especially when he's gone out here and won twice in the last 3 years. I'll pay attention to his commentary and what he's saying and essentially how the car looks in practice and qualifying and see what the case is. I am going to operate as if I think that he's, you know, going to be running out there for a top five and a win.
Yeah, I would say I don't think he's going to be on cruise control. It's hard to turn it off when it's your specialty. Mm-hmm. And making it so that everybody else has to point in is certainly an advantage. But I do think that the round of eight is a very interesting setup for these guys because it's basically the most normal round we have in the playoffs because you get Vegas, you get Homestead, and you get Martinsville.
Three great tracks, though.
Yes. Phenomenal racing, and we're going to see a whole lot of bump and runs happen in Martinsville when people absolutely need the last spot. But I will say that, you know, forcing people to have to point their way in on a track that they're probably not great at the Roval is probably Chase Elliott's best strategy at this point.
You want to just dive into some news really quick? I mean, we briefly alluded to the Kevin Harvick penalty. He's already out of the playoffs, but it's a sizable monetary fine. What was the issue with the car last week that they found in post-race tech?
The rear deck lid was apparently messed up. I'm not entirely sure how it was changed, but that is a part that NASCAR gives them that they are not allowed to change at all. So Kevin Harvick was surprise, surprise. That was his reaction on Twitter because, you know, he's been all over the governing body the last 2 weeks for safety stuff. But I also don't think they're going to target, like, him specifically because he's already out of the playoffs. So I don't know if they were going to target anybody. I would think they would target Denny, who basically said there needs to be totally new leadership from top to bottom in NASCAR. But he didn't have a problem at Talladega. So, you know, we'll see. I think the bigger news is that Rodney Childers is suspended for 4 weeks. So basically the rest of the season till Phoenix, basically. And it was a pretty hefty fine. We'll see. I have not heard any news about William Byron's appeal. Have you seen anything about?
No, I occasionally see Pockers jump in and just confirm he'll say something like William Byron's appeal will not be heard this week. I haven't really heard anything official about that either. I am curious to hear like what you have to think about the safety of the car. That's obviously been a hot topic as you were just kind of talking about before, but like, here we are this late in the season And obviously, like, the impact and the wrecks have taken a toll. Like, we, you know, we had two playoff drivers. You know, Kurt Busch is out with a concussion. Alex Bowman is out once again. Noah Gregson's going to be in the 48 for him. Cody, is that kind of just stealing the luster from, you know, the next-gen cars first season and how this season is coming to an end when you have two full-time drivers, two notable and recognizable guys, and they're just not racing?
Yeah, it definitely steals the luster. Don't want to forget Cody Ware, who's also not in the car this week because it's his ankle is not in a place to deal with a road course. But, you know, specifically with – I know that Cody Ware's hit was massive and Kurt Busch's hit was massive. The Bowman one to me is way more interesting because – he basically tapped the back of the car against the wall. Like, it's not what you would consider to be a major damage. And then you watch his head inside the car, and it just bobbles all over the place. So, yeah, something in that car is too stiff, is what I think it comes down to. Like, whether the floor is too stiff or the diffuser or something, they are shifting all of the forces to the driver rather than dissipating the forces away from the car like the previous one did. So I think there's going to be a pretty big redo for next year, I would assume. For the most part, I think the tire issue has been basically solved. I think Goodyear kept harping on the fact that it was the team setting the tires too low. They were doing it because, you know, aside from Texas, we haven't really had that many tire issues in the second half of the season, really. So I don't know. I mean, I'm on board with Harvick and Hamlin to a degree that safety was not listened to. The drivers brought this up. It tests in December and January for the next gen car, and it seems like they were ignored. Not really anything you're going to do about it with five races to go in the season. But it is a shame that Kurt Busch is basically, I would assume, is probably going to end his career at this point. And Alex Bowman, I mean, I'm glad they're taking concussions seriously, but it's definitely not great that it's basically knocked two drivers out of the playoffs for something that's not really their fault.
Last bit of news from the past week, AJ Allmendinger is going to be back in the Cup Series full time. I'm actually curious, like, because I know he retired a few years ago, came back on a part-time schedule with colleague, just doing a handful of races. I think that was in 2020. Came back full-time in 2021, obviously did another full-time season at Xfinity in 2022. I am surprised, like, do you think that a full-time opportunity at the Cup level was somewhat pushed on him by colleague? Because for me, it seemed like he liked the schedule with Xfinity because Xfinity doesn't run every weekend like Cup does. You know, there are sporadic weeks off. A veteran like him, it allows him more time to be with his family. So I was a little surprised because it seemed like he was genuinely happy just running the Xfinity schedule.
Yeah, I was a little surprised too. For colleague, it makes a lot of sense because if you think about it, the 31 car was manned full-time by Justin Haley this year, right? That's not changing next year, nor should it. Justin Haley's had a pretty solid season in that car. The 16 car, though, they had a pretty big – because keep in mind, it was three different drivers that were in the 16 car this year, right? It was Allmendinger, it was Noah Gragson, and it was a little bit of Daniel Hemric. Well, Gragson's got a full-time ride in the 42 next year. Hemric, I don't think they want any parts of him in the Cup Series again because he hasn't done anything to prove that, frankly, he should stick in the Xfinity Series either, but whatever. So I think for them, it's just easier to put Dinger in the car and get an open ride to keep developing talent in the Xfinity Series, because they only have the one. Do they have the one car in the Xfinity Series, or do they have two cars in the Xfinity Series?
I'm sorry, you kind of broke up right there.
Oh, I was saying, do they have one car in the Xfinity Series or two?
They have three.
They have three. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not sure what the status, like, are the other two full time next year?
I don't know the status of Castle or Hemric. I'm imagining that they'll both be back in their cars. I know Chandler Smith is getting bumped up from trucks, right, switching from TRD and joining Chevy and Colleague, which is a nice promotion for him. He deserves it.
It's definitely a nice promotion for him going to this team full time. So I don't know. Maybe they sweeten the deal a little bit for him, but I'm kind of with you. Like, I was kind of surprised that he came back full time to the Cup Series, knowing that there's one off weekend next year for the Cups, for the Cup cars. One. Father's Day weekend is the only off weekend again for a Cup Series. So I'm with you. I was kind of surprised.
I will say I'm pretty excited. I mean, granted, for DFS, I think that next year at Xfinity is going to be as high variance as ever, just with so much youth in the series. But, you know, it's nice to get some fresh faces in good equipment. You know, I've liked what we've seen from RCR with Sheldon Creed and Austin Hill. I don't really know what JGR is going to do, but I would like to see John Hunter Nemechek get one of the JGR cars, either vacated by Brandon Jones, who's moving over to JRM, or Ty Gibbs, who's going to probably make the jump to Cup.
Yeah, do we know that that's a fait accompli at this point?
Like, that Ty Gibbs is going to Cup?
Yeah.
Or do I would we say think it's probably 96% likely.
Do we think that his pit road chicanery against there and Ty Gibbs bumping Eric Jones under caution twice is kind of making him rethink?
Well, did they ever punish him for that? Other than giving him a stern talking to?
They punished him for pit road, sort of. They fined him, which obviously he's not going to pay. And then they gave it owner points because you can't give him driver points because he doesn't qualify for driver points. So they took away owner points for a car that wasn't even in the playoffs to begin with on the owner side. So not really a penalty, to be honest.
All right, let's dig in. Let's start talking about the Roval. Two races this weekend. We get Xfinity and Cup Saturday and Sunday. The trucks are off this week. The trucks only have like two races left in the season.
Yeah.
Xfinity runs Friday afternoon, I believe. Practice and qualifying is Saturday morning, so I will have a preliminary write-up just highlighting the road course drivers. That'll be available Saturday morning. I'll write that up Friday night. And then there will be updates following practice and qualifying. Matt, I'm guessing Cup Playbook will be up Saturday night into Sunday morning.
Cup Playbook should be up like Saturday afternoon, probably.
Nice.
I will get a jump on it. I don't know, Thursday, Friday, somewhere in there, depending on how the football schedule and what else breaks on the site. And NHL, I think, starts Friday, so I may have to do a little bit of stuff with the NHL tools. But yeah, I will have the playbook and projections and everything up Saturday afternoon, into Saturday, like dinner time. And then the Cup race is 2 p.m. Eastern on Sunday on NBC. So they're going straight up against the middle of NFL Sunday. So that should be interesting. We'll see what the ratings look like. F1 is also this weekend. For those of us that actually, what?
Where are they at this week?
Japan.
Oh.
Which means the race happens at like 1 o'clock in the morning, East Coast time, Sunday morning. I don't know. It's very early. Everything is basically overnight for us. So I will have a playbook out for that one. It probably will not be out as soon as practice and qualifying end because, let's face it, it's going to end at like 3 o'clock in the morning. My time on Saturday morning. So, but it will be up relatively early Saturday. So you should have a full day Saturday there to look at it if you are interested, in playing that. So yeah, that's kind of the content schedule.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Talking the Roval, Chevy's, I believe, have won every single road course this year, as we highlighted earlier. Race winning manufacturer Chevrolet is minus 150.
Gee,
what's that?
I said, gee, I wonder why.
Ford is plus 230. Toyota is plus 400. Is there any sense in betting a Ford or Toyota, or are we pretty confident that it'll once again be a Chevy in victory lane?
I'm pretty confident it'll be a Chevy, but I could see... I mean, I could see scenarios in which a Toyota or a Ford would win. Obviously, you have higher odds with Ford simply because there's more of them on the track. But, you know, I could see, like, Blaney or Cindric certainly, you know, showing up. McDowell's a sneaky play for Ford. Cole Custer, by the way, has been very good at road courses this year, if people haven't been paying attention. He also was very good at the Roval last year before he had a late race incident.
Would you take Custer at plus 350 for a top 10?
Yeah, I probably would. Probably would.
He's like the last driver you get at like 3.5 to 1 because he's plus 350, and this is DraftKings Sportsbook. And then it jumps to plus 800 for Harrison Burton, Todd Gilliland, Almirola Haley, plus 1500 for Stenhouse, Ty Dillon, and then who we're assuming are going to be the back markers.
Yeah, I mean, look, Cole Custer's run here twice. He's got a 9th place finish and an 18th place finish, but the 18th place finish, he spun late, but was running 9th at the time. So he's clearly capable of finishing top 10 here. He's been pretty good at road courses this year, if memory serves. For as much as we want to rag on Cole Custer normally, he's actually been pretty good at road races. Obviously, the Brickyard was nuts, but he did move up from 24th to 9th at the Brickyard. Road America, 15th place, started 10th. So, you know, he's had some successes here on road courses this year.
All right. We talked about Chase Elliott at the beginning of the podcast. Chase Elliott, Tyler Reddick, Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin, the four drivers over 10,000 on DraftKings. I'm going to play a mixture of the first three. I don't know how much exposure I want to Denny Hamlin for this race, but I feel like I probably end up being heaviest on Tyler Reddick. He's out of the playoffs, but obviously, as we've seen, he has plenty to race for. He's still going to be wanting to collect wins. If he wins this weekend, I don't even think that this would be his last win of the season with Miami still on the schedule. Who do you like most at 10K?
I'm right there with you. It's those three. Hamlin's been okay here. But at that price, I need better than okay. I need a guy who has a legit shot of winning, and I just don't think of Denny Hamlin as a guy with a shot of winning at a road course. Like, I think of him as a guy who can finish solidly, but again, at 10-1, I need you. If you're going to finish solidly, you better suck at qualifying. And then you become chalk, because everybody expects you to finish well and get them the PD. So I'm with you. I'm probably even between Chase and Reddick there, and then I think Larson's kind of the sneaky guy over 10K.
Okay.
Of those three.
In the 9K range, we do have six drivers. William Byron, Ryan Blaney, Joey Logano. Obviously, we have a pair of Penske drivers. AJ Allmendinger, noted road course ringer, hasn't won this year. Well, he's actually won plenty of road courses in the Xfinity Series.
Yes.
Did win, I think it was Indy last year for the Cup Series in their inaugural race, which was a mess. Christopher Bell is a pretty good road racer. His first career win in the Cup Series came at the Daytona road course. And then we have Ross Chastain at $9,000, whose price has been falling drastically. But he's been okay the last handful of races. He's been 4th, 13th, 6th, and 7th last week. He did end up leading 36 laps, but never count on that for a super speedway. Is Ross Chastain earning his way back into our good graces? Did win a road course earlier this year.
Yeah, I think he may actually be playable at this point at 9,000. Look, he's had three top seven finishes in the last four races. Obviously, one of those was Talladega, but hey, he started sixth and finished fourth, so he held his own at Talladega.
It's 15-1 to win. I don't hate it.
I don't hate it either. Considering the fact that he's won a road course this year, he finished fourth at Road America. You know, he's done well. I will say this track is not really comparable to any of the other road courses, but it you can, like, when I say that, obviously the driving style is similar, but we can't, like, I can't go, well, the Roval is similar to Coda, because it's not, right? They're all, each road course is different. This one's not even technically a road course. It's like a hybrid. But, you know, we're still basing.
If I guess the argument you could make for Ross Chastain is that he's won a road course this year, and at the Coke 600, he led over 150 laps with 66 fastest laps.
Yes.
So if you take that and then you mix in the road course success, it makes sense that he could do well here.
Yeah.
Stupid
now
here, analogy, I know.
Here's my question, though. Is this going to turn into like a Harvick Chase situation from last year?
Between him and Hamlin, or
I mean, between him and everybody, that, which is like half the field at this point. Like, that's my only concern. Is this seems to be a place where guys try to target you because there's multiple ways to take somebody out here. Although Harvick peed himself and ran himself into the wall last year when trying to take out Chase Elliott, but. That's my only hesitation with Chastain, is it's getting to the point in the playoffs where people may start, you know, writing those checks to to pay him back.
What's the approach with AJ Allmendinger this week? I know it might boil down to really where he qualifies.
You play him.
Finished seventh at Bristol, second at Watkins Glen, seventh at the at Indy. I mean, he's only run three races since the end of July. That's a pretty good floor. Like, I've tried to
avoid. He showed up with no practice at Gateway and finished top 10. The guy's a racer. Now we're going to put him on a track where he's run well previously in a car.
Actually,
that runs well.
I think that he's won every race in the Xfinity Series at the Roval.
I think you're right. That rings relatively true.
Oh my god. Yeah. So since 2019, 2020, and 2021, he won all three races in the Xfinity Series at the Roval with a driver rating of at least 130 in every single race, and he led at least 10 laps in each race. He led at least 20 in two of the three.
Yeah, and he finished seventh in his first race in the Roval in the Cup Series.
Yeah.
It's AJ Allmendinger. You play him on a road course.
All right, let's dip down to the 8K range. Was there anyone else we wanted to touch on? Byron, Blaney, Logano? I mean, Logano, I don't really know.
I don't know. I mean, Blaney obviously won here, as we said, maybe before recording. He accidentally won when Jimmy Johnson took out Martin Truex in the final corner in the inaugural Roval race. Byron is a sneaky good road racer, I will say. And he's got that point penalty thing kind of still hanging over him, right? Like, he could be in or he could be out. Nobody really knows because he's got the 25-point penalty kind of hanging over him. So, you know, clearly my favorite is Allmendinger in this range.
I think it's also worth noting for Byron that he's finished top 12 in all five playoff races.
There you go. I think Chastain is a very, very good play. Christopher Bell is an interesting guy. I don't know what to make of him right now.
See, I was going to touch on him a little bit in the end of the podcast when we talk a little bit of strategy.
Okay, well, we can save that till then.
Sure. All right, we'll dip into the 8K range. Not a lot. Well, actually, there's five drivers in the 8K range. Martin Truex Jr. is 8,800. Austin Cindric, 86. Daniel Suarez, 85. Chase Briscoe, 83. And Kyle Busch, 8,100. Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's almost as if, like, DraftKings is just mailing it in with his pricing as he is this season, because he has finished outside 20th or worst in five straight races. Now, granted, two of those were actually he was 10th at Daytona at the end of the season, but since the playoffs started, he's finished 30th, 26th, 34th, 36th, and 20th. Ugh.
That's not a great run.
That's ugly.
This is easily the cheapest he's been. That includes the Busch Light Clash at the Coliseum when he was, he was free there because they didn't have any pricing. But the Daytona Duels is the next cheapest he was at $9,200. So that's an exhibition race. You have to go find his cheapest price. They knocked $1,800 off of him since last week. I can't blame him, but I also can't not blame him at that price.
Yeah.
Because it's still Kyle Busch and it's still the 18 team. And if he figures it out, he can absolutely be a threat to win. But maybe they know something that, I don't know, part of me is it feels like a trap play, so don't do it. And then part of me is it feels like a trap play, so you got to step into the trap to try to beat them at their own game.
Oh, I think I gave you Kurt's numbers at the Rumble.
Did we give Kurt's? What has Kyle's been? Let's see, what has Kyle Busch done?
Ooh, average finish of 23.7 at the
Rumble. Yeah, you did. Yeah, Kurt's got two top.
Kyle finished top five here last year, but outside of that, he's finished outside the top 25 in the races with.
Outside the top, top 30. He had 32, 37, 30, and fourth.
Yeah.
That's dicey, man. That's. what are we doing with Truex, though, to stick with the Toyota theme here?
You know, I don't know, man. So there was the narrative earlier in the year that, the Toyotas were qualifying really well on these road courses, but then they would go out and they would just, on Sunday, and they would just run a completely, just an absolute dumpster fire race. Remember Sonoma when everyone was...
Oh, yeah, I thought it was a free play at Sonoma, and he just sucked.
Yeah, it's just very... He's another guy that it's hard to get excited about, but, the price is great, and he still has that pedigree of being a great road course driver. Prior to 2021, the class of the road ringers in the Cup Series was Chase Elliott and Martin Truex Jr. And Kyle Larson came in, won a handful of races last year. Tyler Reddick's won two road courses this year. We've seen Trackhouse get two wins. And so it's almost like Truex just hasn't been on anybody's radar. And not in the playoff picture, hasn't won a race this year. It's just been a heartbreaking season for him. Maybe he can turn it around here. I have a very difficult time getting excited about the Toyotas this week.
Yeah, you realize that Truex's finishes in the playoffs have been terrible, too. Mm-hmm. 31st at Darlington, 5th at Hollywood Casino, so Kansas. 36th at Bristol, 34th at Texas, and 26th at Talladega.
Finished 14th,
7th, 7th,
and 29th at the
Rumble. Yeah. Boy, Rumble has not been kind to him. Austin Cindric, though, I'm going to play him simply because that guy can figure out any road course he's on.
How's he done this year on them?
He was the only dude who could pass anybody at Sonoma. Started 25th, finished 5th.
I do remember that. Yeah, good call.
He'd never raced on before in competition.
Yeah.
And somehow figured out a way to pass people. He finished 2nd. He started 2nd and finished 2nd at Indy. So can't really say that the craziness had an effect on that because he finished where he started. Now, he didn't lead any laps, but I'll take a top 2 finish. Mm-hmm. He ran solidly at the Glen. Not great. Coda, he pulled off a top eight, started 10th, finished 8th. So I don't really understand why a guy who got his entire start in racing in open wheel is this cheap.
Right. Matt, I can hear your dog in the back.
Yes, my dog is snoring. it is what it is. My dog just snores. So we'll just keep rolling like nothing's going on. And yes, I'm aware that he has not raced on the Roval in the Cup Series, but he had never raced at Sonoma and still figured out how to pass 20 people.
Yeah, I guess we can't really hold it against him that he didn't have any wins on the Roval and Xfinity since AJ Allmendinger's sweeping them all.
I mean, yeah.
You want to dip into the 7K range? There's some interesting price tags.
Yeah.
Kevin Harvick, fresh off the massive penalty, 7,900. This would be a, I don't know, this track is probably haunting him from a year ago, but he's 7,900. Chris Buescher is 7,800. Noah Gragson in the 48, so good equipment, and it's a Chevy, and they've dominated road courses this year. He is 7,600. Eric Jones, 7,400. Michael McDowell with 13 top 10s. Career year for him, really. It's been phenomenal, even though he did win Daytona last year. He is also a noted road course specialist. Credit to Matt for really driving that narrative home for the last few years. Bubba Wallace had a top five at Indy Road Course earlier this year. He's openly said he doesn't really like road courses. And Brad Keselowski is 7K. So obviously we have quite a few names to discuss in this range. Who sticks out? I'm guessing it's probably going to be Michael McDowell is an obvious one. Bubba Wallace is probably an easy fade. I feel like Chris Buescher could be sneaky.
Chris Buescher's, yeah. I mean, do we all remember what happened at Sonoma? Because that guy was phenomenal there. And then Brad Keselowski called him the most underrated driver in the garage, which...
He won Bristol.
I mean, he did win Bristol. And it's also not shocking that Keselowski, the guy that pays his paycheck...
is picking his driver up?
But, you know, Buescher's had 11 top 10s this year. So... That's pretty impressive. Yeah, Michael McDowell is probably the easy one in here, given his history on open wheel tracks. He's also come close to winning a couple of road races. At the Roval, he's been hit or miss. So we've got, you know, a couple of finishes like 12th and 16th and then one 32nd place finish. So not ideal. Buescher, on the other hand, finished third here a year ago. By the way, and then everything else has been 20th or better. So that's reasonably solid for a guy in this range. I don't know what to do with Kevin Harvick. I don't know if pissed off Harvick is going to show up and just ruin everybody's day. It's hard to peg him at this point. The last time that he got caught for cheating, he came back and dominated the next race and then pointed to the rear window like, hey, man. It's fixed now, and I still kicked your rear end. That may happen this week. He's not usually thought of as a great road racer, but he does have three top 11 finishes here. So I don't know.
Noah Gragson in the 48. In the Xfinity Series, not the most elite numbers. There were obviously better drivers, ranging from AJ Allmendinger, Austin Cindric, even Ty Gibbs scored more wins. But strangely enough, this has been his best road course in the Xfinity Series. He's finished 6th last year, 2nd in 2020, and 5th in 2019, and he did lead 16 laps in the 2020 race. So if you're looking to buy into a cheap driver in really good equipment, Noah Gragson does warrant some consideration. And we're just completely off Bubba unless he's starting dead last.
I don't know, man. I may fade him even if he's starting last. He hates road courses. Like, has commented numerous times that he is not a fan of road courses at all. So, I mean, I know that you hit that big-ass bet on him in Indy, but let's face it, he needed 17 other cars to wreck out for that bet to hit, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at his, aside from Indy, his road results have been
terrible.
Horse this year. Yeah, they've been really bad.
Like, really bad.
Easy fade if he's starting. It's probably a really good fade in GPPs if you don't plan starting from the rear, because see him getting like 20 to 25%.
I mean, he started 23rd at COTA and still managed to finish 38th. He started 27th at Sonoma and finished 36th. Like, yes, he got a top five at Indy, but again, he needed all 16 cars in front of him to wreck out for that to happen. Started 23rd at Watkins Glen and finished 35th. So, you know, I know some of these things have been equipment related, but not all of them. And at some point, you've got to wonder, does the equipment just suck? So, yeah, he's finished like in the 30s, basically every road race except for Indy Road.
Let's dip into the 6K range where we start to look first for our value plays. You already touched on Cole Custer. If you want to elaborate, I will let you. But we do have Austin Dillon at 6,900. Probably not a nice play this week unless he's starting last.
He's not usually a very good road racer.
Custer 67. Ty Gibbs is 65. Hasn't looked great the last few playoff races. 37th last week. 20th, 35th, 34th. Top 15 at Darlington. It's been an adjustment for him. I do wonder if he's a little burnt out because he's never really had a schedule like this. You know, he's running full-time in Xfinity.
He's turned 20 years old.
Yeah, and he's like now finishing the season in Kurt Busch's car. So he is racing twice every weekend. Eric Almirola, 64. Justin Haley, 62. Ricky Stenhouse is 6th. $1,000. Is Cole Custer your clear-cut favorite out of this range?
Yeah, probably. I mean, if you want to go super cheap, there are kind of some interesting guys. Like, Connor Daly might be an interesting guy to just take a stab at in GPP.
He runs, what, IndyCar full-time?
Yeah. So he might be, now the equipment sucks, right? It's money team racing.
That's trash.
It's not great, but as long as he doesn't have to pit, he may make up spots. I don't know. Joey Hand is injured. I mean, I know the results haven't necessarily been there for him, but I feel like he's run better than those results bear out at road courses. But yeah, I mean, other than that, Justin Haley, maybe his teammate's AJ Allmendinger, so maybe he helps with setup on the car. But yeah, I mean, Cole Custer has been sneaky, sneaky good at road races, this year. And if the finishes haven't always borne out, the running position has been reasonably good. He also, if you look at like true speed metrics, like green flag speeds and whatnot on road courses, he's top 12 in green flag speed this year on road courses. So the speed has clearly been there. We just need the finishes to kind of cooperate with us here.
Now, I know I alluded to some strategy talk when we were kind of touching on Christopher Bell. My whole point, and this can apply to almost any driver, is that when we're talking road courses, you know, we've mentioned numerous times that there's fewer laps. I don't know how many laps there are for this race. I'm guessing 80, 90. Is it over 100?
Let me check for you here.
But either way,
400-mile race. I can't remember how many miles the actual track.
I thought it was like 3.5 or 3.6 miles. But my point is that, you know, if you're playing cash games or GPP, you don't need to lean on the dominator points too much. It's perfectly fine if you do build with one dominator, and it also helps if they get a top 10 finish, so they're not killing you too much by going backwards if they aren't leading laps.
Yeah, there's 109 laps. It's 252 miles. The 400 in the number is kilometers.
Okay, so it's
109 laps.
75 Dominator points or so. But my point is, like, take the PD where it's available to you. If we do get, you know, a popular guy or an elite driver in great equipment and they're starting towards the rear, whether with they just don't post a qualifying lap or if they just get loose and don't sustain any damage. In cash games, I'm not afraid to necessarily eat that chalk and just take the PD where it's available, because we ultimately do need, you know, we do need drivers finishing very well and gaining PD, maybe collecting some PD points as well, but it also helps to get the winner in your lineup as well. So, you know, at a road course where it all mostly just, a lot of the success for your lineup is going to boil down to the PD and the finishing position of all five or six of your drivers, depending on the set that you're playing. Don't shy away from taking the PD when it's available to you. You know, and don't go too heavy on stacking guys starting towards the front, because in all likelihood, that's going to negatively correlate your build, and it's going to give you a very narrow path to being optimal.
Yes, you're going to need, unlike most other road courses, you can actually pass, and, you know, there's a lot of changing of positions at the Roval, typically, simply because it's half oval, half infield road course. And there tends to be a lot of sneaky passing opportunities in this layout that people don't necessarily assume are there. So, I'm with you. This one is about a PD build. If you get the guy that dominates the most laps, great. But there are ways to not have to have that guy in your lineup and still win. Like, for example, let's say that Chase Elliott's on the pole, and so you assume he's going to lead more than half the laps, right? So if you want him in your lineup, you automatically go down to 78-80 as your average driver that you can play. So if we go, okay, who else do we like? We're definitely playing Allmendinger at 9,400, right? We liked Austin Cindric at 8,600. We liked Buescher at 7,800, right? But now we're down to 6,800 for the last two spots, which gives us Custer at 67, and we can top out at Austin Dillon at 69. So, like, your options at that point aren't great. So, yes, while you have Chase Elliott in your lineup, and you're expecting him to be the dominator, you're now sacrificing the last spot in your lineup to go get the dominator points that may not be necessary, right? Let's say, for sake of argument, that Chastain is the better PD play, even though he's not going to dominate. Now your last spot can be a guy like Suarez at 8,500, or Kyle Busch at 8,100, or McDowell at 7,300, right? So even though we forego, theoretically, this is, again, theoretical, we don't know the qualifying spots at this point. This is Wednesday night. I would rather have a lineup that was like Chastain, Allmendinger, Cindric, Buescher, Custer, McDowell, which are all like PD and solid finish position plays, rather than four of those guys, Chase Elliott, and then some scrub like Joey Hand or, you know, something like that.
Is there anything else you wanted to touch on for this weekend's race? Honestly, I'm actually really looking forward to this weekend because there's no MMA. It's the MLB playoffs. NBA is not fully starting, and NHL is kind of getting the wheels rolling. So it's really just...
Yeah, they start in, like, Russia. The NHL starts in, like, Europe somewhere.
Oh, doing some... Okay, I guess that makes sense. Okay, so
there's two... It's like... I don't remember who's playing, but the same two teams are playing each other twice, like Friday and Saturday, over in Europe, in an interesting way to kick off the NHL season. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this too. I'm also looking forward to F1 at Suzuka. It's going to be a great
wait for it.
Hopefully, it's going to completely mess with my sleep schedule this weekend. 100%. It's going to be like I'm playing in London in the NFL. and by the way, I know this is a NASCAR podcast, but if you're playing fantasy football, get up early and double check your lineups for the London game. Don't sleep in and then complain your dude got taken out and you didn't know it. Be responsible.
I agree. I told Grande this story on the 2 Minute Drill podcast, and I'll be brief, but I was up at around 3 a.m. Eastern time in the NFL Discord, and I was helping one of our subs make the decision if he should start Alvin Kamara or not, and I was under the mindset that he was going to play. You know, I know that he was limited in practice all last week, but this subscriber of ours was also in Hawaii, and so when it was 3 a.m. for me, it was like 9 or 10 p.m. at night for him, and he was getting ready to go to bed. And I didn't want to tell him how to live his life. You know, what I should have said is, well, what I would do is I would just set an alarm, just make sure he's active, and then like, just go back to sleep. Yeah. But, like, he didn't do that, and I felt terrible when I got the news at 8 a.m. Sunday morning as I was jumping into the Discord and Kamara was out. And my initial thought just went to, like, that one subscriber, and I felt terrible because, like, I just knew there was no way I could wake him up and just get him to check his lineup. But I agree. You are responsible for your own lineups. Just, I live by the motto, like, I love to cover my ass as much as I possibly can. I know, like, not everything is under my control, but if I was in a spot where I could just set a quick alarm, 3 a.m. or 6 a.m., depending on what time zone I'm in, I'm going to do it and just set my lineup, make sure that I have a lot of guys in, because 85% of the people on CBS Sports Leagues missed that news on Alvin Kamara, and he was started in 17 out of 20 leagues.
Yep. Insane. People wanted free switcheroos, and I was like, no.
But anyway, Matt, also a pretty solid podcast, I like to think, for, you know, since we've kind of been a little sluggish the last couple weeks, but obviously.
Yeah, by the way, you didn't see the Monday Night Rants with Malin on it this past Monday. You can go back. It should be on demand in the Better Sports Network app and go.
True. It was actually a lot of fun. I thought it was just going to be 15 minutes, but then
with weird sandwiches.
We didn't talk about that, actually.
Really? Because I brought it up on my segment. He's like, I'm going to have Malin on and ask him. I was like, he eats peanuts with the shells on.
Yeah, that's true.
He eats like mayo, peanut butter, lettuce sandwiches. Like,
so true. But anyway, solid breakdown for the role of this week. Matt, best of luck to you in Charlotte, and best of luck to the FA Nation.
That's the walk-up animation.